always something that you've got to think about. And at the moment, there are a heck of a lot more somethings than we've had for a while, which we're really pretty pleased about, because that's because there's a lot of momentum around. We are making haste very slowly on the Redlands property, and there are some things that will break the deal, so we're not at all confident that that will go anywhere. But we've gone to the point of postponing the trustees' meeting, because there's no point in having it until we've got everything in place. But the just so you know, the sort of issue that you have to deal with is the fact that when you take on even a small part of a building for a lease, it's not at all unusual that you become responsible for the flat roof, for instance. And so actually getting that under control is pretty key, because you could end up with just a massive commitment. So what we're trying to do is to say to Wiltshire Council, well, yeah, it's all very well that we should take a cut of repairs that need to be made, but it needs to be, we're going to start with 200 and probably not allow more than £500 in a year. Those sort of things add to the workload that David's facing. Andy is fairly short capacity at the moment. Now, if you've seen the photos of what we're doing on the bus this week, if you understand them, you understand them. If you don't, you don't. I'm probably not interested either. But basically, we're putting bits in now rather than taking them out, which I always find very reassuring. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, I'm going to have to do this twice, so bear with me, is just in terms of the rollover of people. We've got a significant issue at the moment, and what I want to do is I want to say this quite seriously and definitely, and then to get it into the back of your mind, then we're going to pray and get rid of the word. We are in a serious problem at the moment because of gaps in the rota as far as setup is concerned. We're hugely grateful we don't have a steeple, we don't have to have a building fund, we don't have to have all those sorts of things, but it does mean that we need people for an hour before the meeting and three quarters of an hour at the end in order to get things sorted. Most people have actually got a reason why their preference is not to do that. And that's understandable. The problem is that if we only took those who've got preference for doing it, there wouldn't be many of us. We need two or three people each time, and we got into a ridiculous situation last week where David was not only preaching, but he was doing set-up and shutdown on his own. Now, fortunately, Alan, who's a bit of a star in this way, Alan Forsyth happened to be around, and Alan, after he's done his music stuff, always just gets stuck in and helps. But then he had another commitment, which was perfectly reasonable. How did the walk go? Was it okay? And you did your bit. You didn't actually go. Okay, so his behaviour's not that brilliant. We actually ended up with me and Wendy doing the helping, and I would not have been there had it not been for the fact that I was stepping in for Carol. We always have one member of core team who stay to the end, the purpose being to have somebody who takes responsibility for making sure that all the different bits are checked. And you'll see one of us around normally. But the consequence was that we finished at 1:15, which is a lot later than we would expect to finish in terms of clearing up. It's very rare that we're not out by 1 o'clock. So you can see it only takes about 40 minutes to shut down, and less if people don't stand around talking, really. It's a bad idea, actually, to have one person doing it on their own anyway. And if you've ever read the Bible, you'll actually know in Acts 6 that it says and makes the point quite clearly, it was not appropriate for the apostles to leave the word in order to serve tables. That's not because serving tables doesn't count. Jesus was very keen on serving tables, washing feet, the whole lot. But you have got to concentrate. So it wasn't good for David to be in that position. And I don't know whether it's good for me to be doing that, because part of what we're trying to do at the moment is to make my involvement less central to all that's going on, and we're sort of running out of time on that. It's not that I'm planning to pop my clogs tomorrow, but I would rather be stepping back and allowing space for other people to come forward. And I'm not sure about the age appropriateness. You know, I'm very grateful for the fact that I can still lift stuff, but I'm sure there are other people who can as well. And in fact, if you can't, then actually it's surprising how much you can do with two of you doing one man's job. So that was that's a bit of a thing there as well. I also know, actually, just not wanting to miss the point, if my sons are around and they see me lifting things, they step in and do it. Okay? Just let that one sink in. I think it's a worthwhile point as well. Actually, if my daughter's around, she tells me I will not be doing it. But but that's almost anything I do, she says that about. But the points we want to make, and we will make these again, is first of all, we need people to step up and help. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is that if in fact somebody is there on their own, I have asked that what we do is we get the setup done other than putting the chairs out if we can, and we leave that for when people turn up to join in. So please look around, and if things are not set up, you will know that possibly you need to be getting here earlier to help. And the third thing is that please, please, please don't say I didn't know, because that's where the problem lies. Right? If we don't know, we're not taking shared responsibility. I've just been reading yet another book about post-war Germany where they didn't know. And didn't know is never an excuse when you can find out. So have a think about it and see what we can do. There are other areas. There are always need to bring people forward. We know Sarah has been very faithful. A number of us wrote those cards, those thank you cards this morning, and I had the opportunity to write one for Sarah. And one of the things I said in it, I really appreciate the fact that she takes responsibility for kids' work, spending all week with children. And we also know that she would really like to work with the teens. And that's where, according to Andy and Phil, she really shines, because of the fact that she's able to get them to do what she wants to without being too heavy. It's part coming from a larger family, I guess. And there are always things that we can move around, people put in different places. So if you just bear that in mind, and excuse us, but we will say this again and say it more and more strongly until we either decide that baseball is non-viable because we can't sort our chairs out, or we get the job done, which is what we're hoping. So you do understand, don't you, that if we say, oh, well, I've got children, so I can't do this, in baseball, nothing will get done. Because in the main, it seems a requirement to join baseball, you have to have children in the first place. I don't mean to sound quite as grumpy about that as it sounds. Okay, let's have a pray, and then let's do the things that we've got to do. Yeah? Well, Father, I want to thank you that we've got people that you can talk about this kind of thing to. Lord, I want to thank you for the fact that we're seeing growth, which has given us some anxieties about some of the things. And Lord, I want to thank you for the children, and particularly for the teens. Lord, I just thank you so much for that group of guys. And I pray that one way or another, not only will they find great friends who will be friends for life, but your Holy Spirit will visit them in such a way that they are marked for life and are not suitable for anything else other than seeing your kingdom come here on earth. Amen. Okay, right. I've got a bit of Bible that I want to make. Oh, it keeps on doing this, doesn't it? That's what I wanted. But I just wanted to put in front of you, you probably know this piece, although it's from those verses that you don't all, that I can't always remember where it comes from, but this is from the first epistle of John, chapter 4, verse 10. This is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. And it spins on a bit until we get to verse 19, where it says this, and the punchline, it's not just talking about God's love, it's talking about our love for others, where it says, we love because he first loved us. Now what we're going to do this morning is to think a bit about people's journeys. It's no good word. It's because it becomes a sort of rather strange cliche for people not making progress, oh, we're all on a journey kind of thing. But this week is a good week for me because I've got three interviews, one in Trowbridge and one in, and three in Stoke, Stoke-on-Trent on Thursday, where I'm going to sit down with people I don't know, I've never met before, and I'm going to ask them the question, how did you become a Christian? Please tell me about all the events and experiences that have been part of that. And I sit and listen to that, and sometimes people talk for 10 minutes initially, sometimes people talk for an hour. Now, we don't even want anybody talking for 10 minutes this morning, but I'd like to ask you a question and to frame up what we're going to do next, because we need to pick on some people. And what I want to identify is somebody who had a fairly short time from the point they became aware of God to the point they would say they became a Christian. I want to see what the average is for this group, and I also want to identify another outlier, somebody who took a very long time in that process. Okay, so we're looking for somebody who took a short time and somebody who took a long time. So just as a couple of examples, because we're not going to ask them to go through the exercise. Andy, how long do you think the process was for you between becoming aware of God and becoming a Christian?
Maybe a year, 2 years.
Yeah, that's it. That's really quite a short time. So I'm going to move these things around, but if we say that we're not interested after just the one point, because lots of people have a number of times which they say are key in their becoming Christian. In fact, I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and she identified three different times where she prayed the prayer. And each of those times was significant. I know that my dad, he could identify several times that it became significant, but Andy reckons it was a year or two that that there was the process. Let's just imagine on this sort of line that we've got about a year. That's about a year. What happened in between those two events?
Yeah, just went to a youth group, and they just
talked
about God a lot.
They talked about God a lot. Can you remember any specific conversations?
Yeah, I remember going to a group, and they talked about Jesus riding on cavalry.
Which has scarred you for life, and you never do that kind of thing yourself.
I've never heard the word cavalry before, and I can remember that. Yeah. Thinking that must be cavalry they're talking about. But how does that fit in with this story?
It's interesting that you remember that story, but did it have any emotional impact on you, that conversation? Did you remember that?
It was sort of, I remember thinking of an image of a hill. And obviously, I suppose yeah. It must have been, I can't remember the three crosses on it, that's what was described to me as Calvary.
Yeah.
But, no, that particular group was linked to a friend who I heard about who got baptised in a bath.
Right.
Which I think.
And was that significant for you?
I just thought that was a bit
weird.
Far off gone, really.
Yeah.
I remember thinking about it.
Yeah.
But that was all at home. And when I
so that was a surprise.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. But then you went to university after?
in that process? Yeah, really I experienced God, if you like.
Okay.
I heard about God and accepted that he existed before.
Yeah. When you say you experienced God, what do you mean?
Well, I got baptised and the Holy Spirit spoke in tongues.
Okay. So that was a bit of a, that was around about that time. That all happened in quite a short time.
That was after that university.
Anybody else here had that sort of pattern over a year or two from being aware of God, they came to faith? It was in that short compass. That was for you. How would the pattern have been different for you, Andy? Two Andys. Nice tan, by the way.
Most of you are commenting on the hair.
Who am I to comment on anybody's hair?
I think it was a very fast start from zero to up to something.
Okay, can you tell us a bit about the something?
Okay, I was invited by a friend to the Cross and Switchblade.
Right. If we were doing this historically, that would be back in 1964. Oh, no, not quite that long ago, but a long while ago anyway.
It was in the mid-70s, I can tell you.
Yeah.
I was just a school friend invited, who just happened to be son of a woman of free church.
Right.
And I sort of started going along. And then I sort of have these sort of various things like this, like talking in tongues and things, which was like, wow, you know,
so that was a bit like the baptised, people being baptised and things.
Very, very quickly.
When you say very quickly, are you talking about weeks, months, days?
Weeks,
yeah.
Yeah. But it took a little while before that made sense to me.
Yeah.
So probably sort of 6 months or so before suddenly I had this feeling,
Can I ask you, before that invitation happened, which let's represent that as a conversation, because it's somebody talking to you, isn't it? If we put this, I'm not going to worry about closing the sequence, but is there any time before that you had a moment of awareness of God? Or did you believe before then in any way?
No, input with the church was Rotary Christmas carols.
Yeah. Interesting. There's a lot of work going on. I'm attending a conference about this, which you can imagine may not be interesting to many people. But it's how we categorise those sort of ephemeral and on the edge attendances at church. Because it's surprising how many still quite young people have some experience of going to church, and it's quite exceptional to find somebody, for instance, like Sarah, because you'd not done church at all, had you? You'd done weddings, funerals?
Yeah,
you used to watch from the gate to that. Sarah was part of my pilot study, so I shouldn't really actually mention, I should call her something else. Fred. So there was nothing in your history there. Okay, anybody who had a very long journey that would be up to 5 or 10 years? You came from a church family, didn't you? Christian family? Yeah, that's probably adds another dimension into it. What about you, Julie?
I came into faith as a young one and done Sunday school, and then I left.
Yeah.
Lost my faith for about 20, 30 years.
Yeah. You'd be surprised how many people I hear about. Actually, I need two rails to do that one. But let's just think about this at the moment, because we do need to move on. But it's an interesting thing, because lots of you are in touch with people like Julie who have had a something. Now, what was the something when you were a kid at Sunday school that worked for you?
I don't really know. I was very, very young at the time. I was about 6 or 7, so...
But why did you mention it? Does it matter to you?
Because I can't believe that I actually lost my faith in how.
Yeah.
I can't pinpoint it.
Yeah.
Or why.
Okay. But you did think you lost something.
Yeah, I lost my faith quite badly because I became an atheist.
Looking back at when you were little...
Yep.
How do you know you had a faith then?
I don't.
But you do, because you're saying...
Because I'll come back to it.
But you're saying, I can't believe I lost my faith. That's a really interesting thing.
I had a miracle when I was younger.
Okay.
And I lost my hearing through an inner ear infection.
How old were you?
I was 3 to 7.
Yeah.
I should have been profoundly deaf for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And not being able to speak properly, but I was able to speak properly. My hearing came back.
How do you know that you attributed that to God?
Now I do. Then I didn't.
Not then. Okay.
Because my mum had religious backgrounds, but was taught to her in a demonic way, in that God said you should do this, you know, and it really turned her against it.
So it wasn't her who said this is God who's helped you?
No, it was just something I've come to realise over time.
Yeah, okay.
Because I was told by all the doctors, she'll never gain her hearing back, we can fit her with hearing aids, might work it
out. Right. Now this is really interesting, isn't it? Because one of the things that we're talking about there is something that it's easy to understand what the term means, even if it's an unusual term. Talk about restoring. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And one of the things we help people to do is to find another story for their experience. And that lots of things that we do are involved with that. So your story is interesting, but once again, it's not untypical of somebody who went to a Sunday school when they're young and looks back on it favourably. It's not like I went to convent school and the nuns beat 7 shades of whatever out of me. What it's saying is I remember that positively. I like the stories, I like what was happening. And I know people who say I did that till 10 or I did it till 11 or to 12, but then it all got forgotten. But then when they come to faith later in life, it all starts to make sense again. Okay, so long journeys with big gaps in. I can see, I know that Donna is somebody who came to faith like Andy as a student, that's right, isn't it? And what do you think the process was for you, and with this story we'll finish?
It was a friend's sort of in Freshers Week,
right,
inviting me to things, and then by the Christmas I'd gone along to an Alpha course, so I'd got involved, you know, started visiting churches with these friends. As they were trying to find out, you know, what church to go to. And so very quickly, really, in months.
Yeah, so we're actually getting a number of people on very short journeys here. I tell you, it's probably not the right time to do this, but if you get a chance, just pray for all the Freshers' Weeks going on at the moment, because there are loads and loads and loads of young people who, for the first time, come into contact with people who know Jesus and are good friends and come to faith. Just pray that God, there will be an awakening. Yeah, you know, that's what we're believing for, an awakening, and that people will be awakened and come back and find a place among us as well. Okay, so what I've been trying to set up this morning is a situation really that says, I wonder where your friends are on this sort of journey. We know that 20% of them out there might be willing to talk about Jesus, and we want to, on this occasion, just apply this for a bit to things like Alpha and Cabaret and what we do about inviting people along. And Andy's going to take you through some stuff about that, and if we've got time at the end, we'll do some praying. Thank you. Over to you. I'm done.
Right. Oops. Let me just take this one then. Is that on and working? Is that? Okay. Well, hope it is. Yeah. All right. Okay. What did these? This is a question.
A conversation.
What's that sign mean?
Just coming on.
Process going on. Bit of a surprise.
Yeah. And that's a decision.
I thought that was a light coming on. Right, okay. Okay. And Donna's story gives us a bit of a help, because she's mentioned about Alpha, because I was talking to Phil on the way here about how we were going to just sort of do this bit about how do you decide who you're going to talk to that you know about Alpha? How do you actually get to the decision about that? And so I know that we'll start with, where's Rosie? Rosie, you invited somebody this time, didn't you, to Alpha, and actually they said yes. But if you can just go back a little bit for us and say, how did you, among all of the people you know, because I know that you know quite a few people quite well, how did you decide to talk to Sarah, wasn't it, about Alpha and get into that sort of position?
Let's see if we can get a microphone.
All right.
Yeah. It's not for amplification, this is just for recording. Yeah, it can't be much further away.
Right,
just sit down there and then chat away.
I've got these three friends who I meet with every Tuesday after school and have done for nearly 10 years now. And one of them is very anti anything like that. Two have been to cabaret. Actually, they've all been to cabaret. I think Amy came once as well. But two have been to cabaret a bit more often and have been a bit more keen. And are very warm towards church, and particularly our church, and have said things in the past like, if I was going to church, I'd go to your church, so, you know, and that kind of thing, because of whatever reason. And
so you've told them about Day Spring in the conversations. You've actually sort of said the sort of things that we do and things we're into.
All about us, really, because they say what you're doing at the weekend,
You tell them just as it is. Yeah,
it's just, they know everything about it. We're really open, you know, because we've done going through baby. We met when we were breastfeeding,
right?
And we've done the whole.
Stop there. Yeah.
We all know everything about each other's lives.
Right, okay.
So, and we have very deep conversations. I just knew that they, whenever you were talking about Alpha, I was thinking those two I need to ask.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So, let's ask somebody else. Somebody else ask. Let me have that for a minute. Did Anna? You asked somebody to Alpha, didn't you?
Yeah.
How did you come to decide to ask her?
Well, this sounds really sad. It's because I only know one other non-Christian in Wiltshire. We were just arrived here. And it was obviously a God thing, though, because this lady's husband works overseas. She has three kids. She tried to live overseas with him and put her eldest son into boarding school, and that didn't work out. He's got some problems. So she's had to come back, live here on her own. She's really struggling. So clearly God was behind it all. We had heaps in common. Her husband's over in Qatar, so I must be one of the few people that's working through Qatar and hasn't actually gone there. So anyway, I'm hoping God's got his hand on this relationship. She said no, but I can try it.
So, but how did you come to... You've chosen to invite her because there was a lot in common. Or you were getting on well, or you didn't get on well, but you've got a lot in common. What?
I could see that God was working in the relationship, and he had clearly brought her and us into each other's paths.
Right.
When you were talking about Alpha, I have no other non-Christians here to ask.
No. Okay. All right.
Sorry. Just
go for it.
How could you see that was in the relationship? What were the specific indicators set on other people?
Because we had all of this in common about husbands being away and getting by on our own.
So can I ask them, did you share with her how you deal with the difficulties, like she's, because you have them, you're sharing with her the difficulties, so you're saying things like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I am going to put words in your mouth, but you say things like, I wake up a coffee, you say, well, yep, it's terrible when he's away, and I feel so lonely, but actually what I do then is I pray. Or you said something like that?
We haven't known each other, we've only known each other 2 months, I think.
Right.
I went to in that, the first 2 weeks that Bethany was at school before the summer holidays. So,
right.
Yes, we've had one other spiritual conversation. I just went for it, really, and invited
right.
her.
Right, okay. Okay. All right, thank you. There's Phil, just you invited somebody. You can. Come on.
Oh, yeah, it's tricky at school because And lots of my colleagues are Christians already. But we had a new member of staff, and I knew that she had been listening into a conversation we'd been having as a staff together, and she'd responded really positively to this spiritual story that was being told. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. She sounded really interested about that. So I just remembered that, and then went a few... That was last term, actually. That was in term six. And then this term, went and asked her if she'd like to come to Alpha, and then found out that she was actually a Christian and she'd done Alpha. So that backfired on me, really.
Yeah. I'm not sure it does backfire. It doesn't backfire, really, because I think it's about noticing whether people are open and whether there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
We subsequently have found out that also she speaks in tongues and had a big baptism of the Spirit experience and has really knows God, and you know, it was more charismatic
than we are.
So she was very open. Some of the main things that I'm picking up there is that actually there tends to be this period of time where you need to get to know somebody and sense something's happening. See, Dave and I had a conversation last week where he said, look, he said, one in five of the people you know is open to talking about Jesus. And I said to him, I have a real problem with that, because what I do is I find that's a block to me, having that statistic. So I go... Oh, there was five people in front of me at tea time, well, you know, a cup of tea time at the countryside centre. Oh, which one? You see what I mean? And I can't deal with it like that. So I'll tell you how the way I deal with it is, it's a bit like Dave said, everybody's on a journey, but everybody's spiritual to me. And what I do is I just say everybody's spiritual at some level. And then what I do is I just sort of watch the conversations that come out. So I can tell you where people are at, spiritually, where I think they're at, with the people I'm getting to know. So I know that Chris Franklin, who runs the countryside, so I could tell you where he's at. I can tell you where this guy Derek, who's doing the forge work there, he's a Catholic guy, but he actually goes to church, and he's got some strange views on certain things if you look at his Facebook, but... at the same time, he's quite willing to have a conversation with you, and you can tell he's edging, he's open to faith, but we haven't quite had that conversation yet. I'm not sure if I need to invite him to Alpha. So that's how I start, do you know what I mean? And you've got to have some sort of level of confidence, though, haven't you, that when you're going to invite somebody to Alpha, you're going to be fairly convinced that even if they say no, you're still going to be able to keep the relationship going, and they're not going to think that it's pressure. They're not going to think that you're just trying to convert them. And so I don't know if that helps, but that's where I think I end up feeling. I think that's where... See, it's interesting with Anna. She's known this person a short period of time, and yet she feels... I think you must feel fairly confident that even though she said no, you're still going to meet for coffee, chat about stuff, deal with things.
She said the opposite. Because I only just met her, so she decided not to talk to me yet. It wouldn't matter.
Right, okay. I suppose that
Anna may not be the best example.
No. I was just thinking that. Right, Rolf.
Rosie's
the best.
I just
wanted
to add, I've invited somebody as well.
Yep. Well done.
Yeah.
That's great. Can I? Well, why did you decide then?
You need
the
microphone.
You need the. Yeah, hold on, I'll bring it to you, Rolf. So, how did you decide to invite that person?
Because that person's father passed away, and they went back to Brazil. Some of you may know Fernando.
Yep.
And it's very difficult to work out where he is on his journey, and I think I've probably taken a little bit advantage of the language barrier, and invited him, just because we're having deep conversations about death, about you know, his father passing away, and also the difficult times that he's going through, and I do just find that he's lost in some ways in reaching out. And that's what I've felt. So I've invited him. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. Thank you for that. Because it's we're talking about...
He
January.
Sounded interested. I didn't know.
Okay. There is a bunch of people, though. You know, if these people we're inviting to Alpha are the one in five, if they are the one in five, and I, you know, obviously there's a bit of a thing about that for me. But what about the people that you know? You think to yourself, oh, I can't really invite them to Alpha. I'm not that confident about what they would. You know, where we're at with that. But what about how do you invite those people who are not in that position? You know, they're not showing an openness to coming to something. You know what Alpha's like? It talks about Jesus and all of that, and it, you know, it's an exploring Christianity course. It's fairly upfront in that sort of sense. And you think, well, this person, I know them, but I don't think I could invite them to that. How do you actually get to invite people who, you know, perhaps more able to go to, say, cabaret or to come to an Advent thing if they're a family, you know, it might be more family-based thing or, you know, with Advent. I don't know, the Advent stuff we're going to do in December. So I've got a couple of people in mind to start us off. Peter, where are you, Peter? Peter. Yes. Peter, just come and sit. Well, you know, you didn't have it there, Peter. You don't even have to move. Just to give you a bit of... upfront thing with Peter is that Peter has regularly over the years invited people to cabaret and they have come, and they're mainly from work if I remember correctly, but you might correct me.
Yeah, I think they're all from work.
Right,
yeah.
So how do you actually invite them even?
I just ask them. I've worked with some of them for years.
Yeah.
I sort of got to know them and sort of their character. And I've invited them, and some have come on their own, some have come with their partner, some have come with fellow workmates over the years. Recently, I invited a guy who I'd only known for a short time, who's sitting near me, I didn't really know him very much, and I invited him and he came along. Yes.
How do you decide which one?
Yeah, yeah. That's fine, you carry on then, yeah. Have the microphone.
Yeah, the people I don't invite, people I just feel, from what they've said, would just say no. So, maybe because they're very, very busy. Maybe that's the main reason, actually. If they're very, very busy, and I can see in their way of life that they just would not want to come along. So I don't ask. I have other conversations with them.
Okay, but I'm slightly... what you do, you're working at your desk, the guy's over there working at his desk, and you sort of go, oh, you'd like to come to Cabaret Connections? And then the guy goes, what the hell's Cabaret Connections? Yeah. I mean, no. So, or do you do it, you go to the water thing, and you've got...
Sometimes take a chair and go sit with them, and chat, have a conversation with them. And then I invite them.
So when you have a conversation with them... Sorry, let me get this right then. He's working...
What's funny about
that? I do. I can see this. You can just picture this. You're working at your desk, Peter. He's working at his desk. And suddenly, you pick up your chair, and you come and you sit next to him. You know, hello. It's not like that, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right. That's the anointing of God on you.
I've also done that on many occasions to do with work issues.
Oh, right, okay. Really? So it's not an unusual... You see, that would be very spooky to me.
Sorry, I have another question. Do you stand up or do you scoop your chair?
So, when the conversation... let's go past that, because, oh, I don't know how you cope with it. So, that's a normal occurrence in your work, but maybe you've got a work problem, and you just take your chair over and sit down next to him. So, it's not an unusual event to just sit down... All right, okay, because go past that, because that would be highly unusual with me. So, what do you actually have a conversation about, though? Do you just sort of say, oh... We've got this thing coming up, and it's called Cabaret, and you know, we just wanted
basically.
Yeah. Just don't scare for it. Oh, okay, right, yeah. Okay.
Are interested, and there's quite a few people that have come along.
Yeah.
And they come more than once.
And you've not gauged. You don't gauge beforehand whether they will say yes or no. You just give it a go.
Sometimes, and I say, one person particularly in my mind, I do gauge, and I have not. I might have invited some time ago, but I don't invite him again. I have one of the other conversations with him.
Right.
But quite often with people, I gauge more on their sort of social interaction. Are they likely to want to join in with a group?
Right.
And I do more, I think, on that.
Okay. I'm beginning to get a lot of pictures to why Peter actually gets people to come to Cabaret, actually.
Well, I can come along.
So, no, because you've got a strategy and a way of thinking about all the people that you're working with, and you are gauging people, and you are engaging them in conversation, so you're not just thinking about your work all of the time when you go to work, but you're actually thinking about these guys in a different way. Yeah. And so
I do.
And so the success of actually getting more people coming to Cabaret is actually based on that thought process, that strategy you've got, which I want to come back to in a moment. But if I can just pass the microphones, Richard, where's Richard? Richard, now, just come and say hello, Richard. I can remember being in a small group with him some years ago, and Richard getting quite upset really with his work colleagues because he just didn't think any of them were interested in spiritual stuff at all.
I'm more upset with God not encouraging them to be interested.
Okay,
I had a conversation about
that. So,
he was right.
But recently... of course, I suppose we've got to say that God is right on that. But recently, you've had some people coming along to Cabaret. So what's actually... How have you invited these guys? How have you actually managed to go over the initial...
One of the problems I have is that no one at work goes to anything like a cabaret. So if you say to somebody, hey, we've got this cabaret on, it's like, what the heck's that? Whereas if you invite them out for a night out to the pub, you know you're going to talk and have drinks. So they don't know what to expect. And I can't invite somebody to something unless I'm fairly sure that they know what they're saying yes or no to.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to describe the event, and it's not an easy event to describe. We've got an act who performs, and then there's some food, and then there's a conversation. It's a sort of chat style conversation. I think a lot of people have also had bad experiences of being invited to evangelistic events where they're shouted at and put under pressure to come forward and things like that. And I have actually had one guy, I talked to him about the possibility of us doing this. He said, I've been to events like that, I don't want to go to that.
Mm.
And he could not get past the it's not like that. So I've had to talk about what the event is like. Sometimes after the fact, people say, how's your weekend? So I describe, we put on this event and it was like this, and it was really fun. Or I helped at it, because obviously I wasn't going, I was doing supporting stuff and serving and things.
Okay.
But now there's enough people at work who've understood what was going on, and then there was one guy in particular, he was definitely interested in spiritual stuff, and I was going to invite him and he left.
But
he was a core person. You talked about the person of peace in various places. He was one of those that if he'd come along, a lot of people would quite happily have gone along with him because he was happy about it.
Right.
And I actually was praying along those lines for him, and then he left.
Yes.
Which was frustrating.
Yes.
So the people the people who've come are people who I either work with or socialise with at work, and have therefore we've had conversations about various things, and I've invited them and they've come.
Right.
And now that there's a couple coming, I'm hoping that I can invite more people because they can go and talk to somebody else about what it's like before they say yes or no. Does that help?
Yeah, no, that's good. So it's about conversation, isn't it? And just moving forward on that. Phil, have you got anything to add on how we invite people to cabaret? Because you've invited quite a few people to cabaret.
I think apart from being able to let people... It's just normal friendship stuff. You have to decide how much you're going to let people know about your faith and what's most important to you. So I think constantly we make decisions on how deep we make our relationships with people. And if you're choosing to do that and to be open with people then and to listen to their story, then you will get more opportunities to maybe...
Yeah. So it's like with Peter and Richard both saying about conversation. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. We've got to move on a little bit because Dave, there's just this thing about thanks, Richard. Dave Sandberg. I was talking to Dave about the Alpha. You know, we were going to do Alpha this last week, and then we didn't really have enough people to be able to do it, and Dave was one of about seven people that I spoke to in the church about Alpha, or they came to me and said, oh yeah, I'm inviting somebody to Alpha, but I don't quite know yet, which is one of the reasons why we've had to postpone Alpha. But when I had a chat with Dave, he said, oh yeah, I haven't been able to see this guy until next Friday, you know, which was coming up. He said, and that really... Well, you tell the story, Dave. What was your strategy, really, with thinking ahead? Because you realise that Alpha is going to be in January.
I guess, when you said we were postponing it, my thought was I needed to still go ahead and ask the person and invite them. They were coming round, because of the way our diaries didn't work, they were coming round to my house and we were just enjoying a few beers together. And... So my thought was that I would look to ask them to Alpha. As it turned out, as we were going through, I just felt more comfortable by inviting them to come in again. So we're getting together again this Friday, and we just had a general chat and caught up because we haven't seen each other for a while. This Friday I was going to open up about Alpha and the thing, but my thinking was I'd left inviting Alpha to sort of beginning of September to get the summer holidays out of the way. And then we hadn't been able to get together for 3-4 weeks, and meant that I've missed the end of September date, and so I want to get in the invite early and not run into Christmas when it will be lost again.
Yeah, that was a fairly key point for me, that Dave was actually thinking 3-4 months ahead. And I think when we've heard what Peter and Richard and the others have said about, you know, inviting to Alpha, actually there seems to be strategy that people have actually been thoughtful about the process of and noticing what's going on with the people around us that we're working with or we're just sharing life with. So I'd just really like to encourage you to have a real think and a pray about the people that you live and work with, as to whether you invite them to where are they at? Do they need just a conversation, or are they in this process? And whereabouts are they? And I know that Dave's really interested in this whole process. We were talking the other day about how fast it happens or how slow it can happen. And I just think that we also, that the whole thing about us being injected into the conversation, like Anna, you know, just as suddenly finds herself in a situation and maybe the whole thing's opening up. And we could find ourselves with a conversation with somebody that we've known for a long time, and then suddenly the conversation opens up because something's happening. Like Rolf, you know, typically, you know, death in the family and people suddenly in a sort of a crisis sort of situation. So I thought we would pray with people.
I think we probably just need to just take a note of the fact that when does God start loving people in this process?
Before they were made.
Right from the beginning. So there's something going on. We love him because he first loved us. And that's what's going on, which is really fantastic. I wanted to say, we will pray just very briefly, but we could have asked.